Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Meet the Author program. My name is Denny Griffin. For the next half hour, I'll be your host. And I believe our guest for this evening is on the line right now. If you'll hold on just a second, I'll make sure.
Okay.
Tony.
Yeah, this is me. I was busy with my 2-year-old granddaughter. I was almost I'm on to your site now.
Okay.
It says, sorry, we can't find www.blocktalkradio.com. Oh, I didn't put the slash in there. My problem. Okay.
Let me put that. Okay, hold on just a second. I'm going to finish introducing you to the listeners, and I'll be right back to you.
Okay, buddy. I'm right here for you. Okay,
thanks.
I'm going to put your website in now.
Okay. So I guess tonight is Tony Knapp Napoli. And Tony,
my name is Tony Napoli. They call me Tony Knapp. Yeah, nickname.
And Tony has a new book out. It's called My Father, My Don, A Son's Journey from Organized Crime to Sobriety. And this is Tony's the son of one of the most powerful and respected organized crime leaders of the modern era. His father was a mob kingpin who ruled over the largest gambling empire in America for almost 40 years. Tony grew up in Brooklyn and has had a checkered life as a soldier, a boxer, an enforcer, a casino boss, a fugitive, and a hustler. And finally, after a brutal attack against a young man who sexually abused Tony's daughter, he was sentenced to a period at a VA hospital. And during these years, Tony cleaned himself up, successfully completing a sobriety program, becoming a pivotal in the Rights for Veterans movement, and helping former boxers get counseling and other services. Tony, welcome to Meet the Author.
I'm here now. I'm on your site.
Okay.
It says, now, what do I do? I'm on your site now. It says web radio.
You don't have to do a thing. You're all hooked up with me, and we're on the air.
Oh, good enough. Then I thought I had to type things in with some people.
No.
Where are you, Las Vegas? Where are you, Denny?
I'm in Las Vegas.
You're in Las Vegas? Good.
Yeah.
All right. I got two of my daughters here. I got a close friend of mine who played for the Detroit Lions, who became one of my father's top high personal friends, let me put it that way. He's 79 years old now. He's here.
Good.
And Big Mike DeSena. He played for the Detroit Lions at one time.
Okay.
When football was football.
the old days, right? It's a real deal. As we get started, Tony, first let me say, anybody who has a question or comment for Tony or wants to ask a question about his book, you're welcome to call in at 646-478-0982, 646-478-0982. And I want to make a programming note before we get too far along. Because I'm an organized crime buff, Tony is a very appealing guest for me, not only because he's an author, but because of his life story. And there was no way I was going to be able to get to everything I wanted to get to tonight in a half hour. So Tony has been kind enough to agree to be with me on December 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern on my Las Vegas and the Mob show. And at that point, we're going to spend an hour, and we'll get into more about Tony's lifestyle and a lot of the topics he covers in his book. So tonight, we're going to scratch the surface with Tony and his story, and we'll get into it in a lot more detail on December 16th. So if you like what you hear tonight or you're an organized crime history type, certainly please join us for the second portion, which will be December 16th. Tony, before I get started too far, your book was also, you worked with a fellow named Charles Messina.
Correct.
Book. And could you tell us a little bit about who Charles is and so forth?
Well, Charles is a youngster who came to me by way of a mutual friend. And he never wrote a book before, but he did directing and screenplay writing for off-Broadway shows.
Okay.
And he was recommended to do the screenplay for me, not the book. And we did a couple of screenplays, which I have in my folder. But after that, I spoke to Charles and I said, listen, My story is a story, and you seem so dedicated and show so much compassion, and you have enough information on my story after 2 years. I think that that was with 2 years I had. Before him, I had two other writers for 3 years, but I kept Charles on, and I had the other two writers, the previous writers, do the excerpts for me and put them down. I paid them a fee, and mm-hmm. But I kept Charles. He was a graduate of NYU, as I said. And he stayed with me, and we worked day and night for 2 years to complete my story from excerpts into a story form and into two screenplays as well. Yes.
Okay, great. Tom, we already have a caller waiting, caller from the 718 area. I'll be with you in just a minute. But
all right, there's a lot of people that I know that I notified. Let's see if we know them.
Okay, hang on. Let me see.
Maybe it's the federal building in Manhattan.
Okay. Caller from 718, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Tony, it's Ernie.
Ernie Despreto, you're
on
the line. All right. This man is, again, Ernie, tell him about yourself. Go ahead.
Well, I met Tony at a restaurant in Queens.
No.
And he nonchalantly, we had a conversation, we were talking about Italian music, whatever. And he nonchalantly started telling me about a club that he used to work in. And he says in passing, well, my father was a bookie, and we got into this club, whatever. And later on, when I realized that his name was Tony, and they called him Tony Knapp, as I'm walking out the door, it hits me, Knapp. Then his father must have, could it be Jimmy Knapp? I remember that name from when I was a little child. And it's the only name I remember that was actually spoken about in reverence. It was anyone in the field, out of the field, cops, non-cops, mob guys, non-mob guys, no one ever spoke about this man with anything other than respect, including cops. All right, and I couldn't believe I was talking to Jimmy Knapp's son. And I got right on the cell phone. I called my father. I said, Dad, guess who I'm talking to? And then he and my father spoke for a half hour on the phone. I mean, that's how legendary the Jimmy Knapp story is. And that's why I think it is incredibly important that a guy like Martin Scorsese or somebody like that grab this. Because as crazy as it might sound, America misses this. I know it sounds nuts. But like The Sopranos, if you go back to 1990, Goodfellas, and of course the trilogy of The Godfather, people actually miss these stories, and this is a true life story, and it is made for the big screen. It's got to get to the big screen, and I just hope that someone's listening, or some agent somewhere hears this or reads this book, because anyone I know that read this book said the same thing. I couldn't put it down. I read it in one sitting.
That's. Well, I was going to get into that a little later. I share your enthusiasm. I think it's. And there are an awful lot of organized crime fans out there and people interested in it. And definitely, this story should go further than the book. I mean, the book is great, but I agree with you. There should be more to it.
Yeah, it should definitely make the big screen. And again, specifics are not important as the message. There's a lot of messages here about respect, about a father's relationship with his son, about a father trying to protect his son, in spite of what the son, everything the son did to try to get in trouble. You know, I love Tony, but the Tony Knapp I know is not the Tony Knapp in the book, I'll tell you that.
Okay. Ernie, thank you very much. I really appreciate the call.
Oh, I love the book, and I can't recommend it enough, and I think it's great he's on your show. And it says a lot about you, too, that you have a guy like this on your show.
Well, thank you, and don't forget December 16th. We're going to do it again for an hour.
I'll be glued here. Tony, take it easy.
All right, thank you, Ernie.
Thanks, Ernie.
Bye-bye.
Tony, hold on. We got another caller pending
buddy.
From my area this time.
Oh, it's probably Anna. I know who it is. It's Anna. I'll
Blink
on
Queen.
Anna, how you doing?
Yeah, Blink Queen. Yeah.
Thanks for calling back. Go ahead, Anna. You're on.
Yeah,
Anna.
You
you're
sound
on.
As sexy as you look on the internet.
Tony.
Yes, darling.
My love. Oh, my goodness. I so enjoyed. I wanted to say what a pleasure, first of all, it is. Talk to you, and thank you, Mr. Griffin, to to have this, to have given us all this opportunity. Tony, I wanted to say, well, I've already mentioned in some, a few emails there how much I enjoyed the book, and I believe that Charles did a wonderful, wonderful job, because a lot of the heart comes out, and that's what really touched me. Just, it's not about just, you know, your quote-unquote monster stories. I mean, there's a lot of heart. It's something to read for everybody. In fact, I bought quite a few books to gift out, and they all love it. And thank you, Tony, for sharing your wonderful, wonderful story. You're a wonderful man. That's all I wanted to say. I highly recommend this book. And it's not, as I said, just about, you know, the mob lifestyle. It's it has a lot of heart. It's very touching, the story about the father and the son, this love-hate relationship, I would call it. And it's very hard to, I know it's very hard to have a father with a certain cloud and always kind of feeling, if you will, inadequate, but in reality, Tony, you are a strong man. That's all you needed to do is just sober up, baby.
Well, Anna, Denny is right there in Vegas, too. You ought to get together with Denny, and because you did a few reviews for me, and you ought to let Denny hear about them when you got time. But he's not far from you. He lives in Vegas.
I know, honey. I just got back from L.A. last night for the music. I was like, so, oh, my gosh. But, yes, you know, we're here to talk, and I'm sure other people are waiting to talk about your book. It's wonderful, and I can't wait. Hopefully they'll put it in the film form very soon, so we can all enjoy it. That would be just a wonderful, wonderful treat for
and
everyone.
You ought to bring to Dennis the screenplay you did, Anna. Dennis is a man of knowledge out there, the man with
I know, sweetheart, but the thing is that I am so busy with you know, my company, Blink Queens Fashions, that it leaves me very little room to. I have to do a final edit. We're here to acknowledge and give thanks and congratulate you on your wonderful, wonderful story.
I want to thank you for going out of your way. I know you're very busy, busy, busy all the time.
Oh, Tony, you know I would have not missed this. You know how much respect I have for you, and through the book,
you.
I've learned. A lot about you, even though the previous caller said the Tony that I know is not the Tony in the book. And I'm like, okay, which one is it? So I don't know. I'm just going to go with the Tony in the book. And I love the character. It's it's very heartwarming.
All right, darling.
Okay, sweetheart. Well, much
thank
luck
you
to you.
All right. Thank you,
thank
darling.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you,
ma'am.
Denny. Thank you, Tony. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Anna. I know it was right away. Yeah.
Anna, don't forget, we're going to do it again for an hour on the 16th of December, same time.
Right.
So if you,
I'll
you're
make
available.
Sure I notify everybody, Dennis.
Okay, Tony, I wanted to talk to you for a second about the, you know, from the writing perspective.
Yes, I'm here.
The first chapter, we always talk in writing about having a lead hook, something to capture the reader right off the bat. And I was very struck with your opening chapter, I've Got to Be Me.
Yes.
And the incident there, and I'll tell you the reason. Not only was it a very dramatic scene that you describe, it's not, and it turned out to be a turning point in your life as the aftermath.
That's true, yes. The last violent act I committed, yes.
But the beauty, well, not beauty, but the thing about it was that I was really taken with, it's not an organized crime thing. In other words, it's a father. So
yes.
Any reader
mm-hmm.
who has a daughter, a granddaughter, a sister, a niece, can relate to that situation. They
and
don't
I
have to have been a mobster.
Yeah, and I believe the jurors did relate to that when I took the witness stand, the first time in my life I ever took a witness stand to defend myself. I was my only witness. And told the jurors that you're not going to meet my daughter on this witness stand. That's why I'm here. I made a deal with the DA. and I'll explain to you what happened. And I did, in a scenario, instead of like objection, 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 and Judge Joan O'Dwyer allowed me to give my scenario with no interruptions, and I did. And I told the jurors that when you go home and you have a daughter, a granddaughter, going off to school in the morning, very happy, and you just have breakfast with her, and all of a sudden she is sexually assaulted, that's my daughter too, when you see your daughter or your granddaughter going out to school in the morning. And that's just what happened, I said. That's when you'll meet my daughter, when you see your own.
That hit home, didn't it?
It did. They were out only 25 minutes and found me not guilty on six counts, but they found me guilty on the count of assault because I admitted being there. And I admitted doing what I did to the punk as an example. And I don't care if I had to do a lifetime sentence. The charges were attempted murder. I was facing 8.5 to 23 years. And after that statement, the judge decided to give me 3.5 years sentence in the VA hospital for observations, because I was a service-connected disabled veteran as well.
And that turned out to be a great thing for you.
Yes, yes.
Because that sentence is really what got you on the right track.
That's true, because that's when I about 8 months after, it was about 8 months after that, I didn't have another drink, and I joined the program and stayed at the VA hospital for 5.5 years instead of just 3.5. I was sentenced 3.5 years, but I stayed an extra 2 years because I wanted to help others out then. I became a counselor, like a patient counselor, you know, not a licensed counselor. I volunteer what I do today for recovering alcoholics and for veterans who need help in their compensation cases for service-connected injuries. I do the appeal form for them. And for indigent fighters who need help, because I'm an ex-fighter myself, and my father helped form Ring 8, which is a known organization in the New York area, since 1954, when my father was one of the founders, and I carry his spirit into that.
The first caller, I believe his name was Ernie, mentioned your dad's name. Let's spend a minute on that, because there, you know, people may not.
Oh yeah, in the five boroughs in New York, Jimmy Knapp name, they called Jimmy Knapp because he was the number bank. Everybody else were controllers, and all the families allowed my father to be the bank, and because he took care of all the bosses, and he had tremendous borrowing power. Now, everyone knew him as Jimmy Knapp. That was the code name in the streets. See Jimmy Knapp, play with his runners, you get paid, you know, and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And respect was there, yes.
And
there was a judge that apologized to my father for sentencing him to 7 years when he was 65 years old for gambling without a license, promoting gambling without a license, and failure to file income tax.
Oh, wow.
He
apologized to him, huh?
Yeah, his name, I'll give you the judge, his name was Judge Meshler. He apologized, he said, "Mr. Napoli, I'm sorry I have to sentence you to the maximum on these charges when the state of New York is doing the same thing you're doing, but the only thing is you have no license." Yeah, the judge said that. It's quoted in the court records, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Tony, I don't want to forget this. Can we take a second, and would you tell people how they can get a copy of your book, any website information?
Oh, sure.
Go ahead and do that for us.
All right. You get a copy of my book, My Father, My Don, and it's on Amazon.com. It's on BarnesandNoble.com. It's on Borders.com. It's on MSNShopping.com. And it's right now is supplied in the in the area of Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey in 52 Barnes and Noble stores total. And also you could go to www.napoli.beckhamhouse.com. He's my publisher, and there you'll see contents of the interior part of the book with pictures and pictures of my family as well. And then you could also go to www.myfathermydon.com, and you'll see pictures of all my family on 5 pages on that website.
So there's a lot of outlets out there where you can get the book and you can see some of the content of the book.
Yeah. I would also like to get back to Ernie Desperto. You know, Ernie Desperto was one time a captain of the NYPD when he knew of Jimmy Knapp too, you know.
Oh, he was. Okay.
And he became and he retired, Ernie. That's the man you spoke to earlier. And Ernie also after he retired became a writer. He became a police reporter.
Oh,
and
wow.
He did it, and Ernie did an article on me, wise guy turned nice guy. I don't know if you read that in the Daily News. I failed to send you that copy, and Ernie did that article on me because Ernie has a father who's a disabled veteran that I helped, and that's how I got to meet Ernie. But Ernie told me how he knew about me beforehand. He knew of me.
It's amazing sometimes how things work out in life. The people you
Isn't
meet,
that remarkable?
The circumstances and stuff.
Yeah.
It's really
an
incredible thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tony.
I was with two retired detectives last night in an Italian restaurant in Corona, New York, in the Queens area. And both of them knew of my father when they were on the job. And they said, we respected him highly. He was a perfect gentleman. And he told us, you do your job, and I have a job to do because I support over 300 families. My father would say that, because, you know. And he said, if I'm wrong, then God Almighty will let me know, but there's no violence in my business, he said. And they knew that.
Yeah.
And they said, we only had to tell Jimmy Knapp to turn himself in the next morning. We didn't have to pull him in. And he did.
So he was highly respected by all, I mean, by the law and...
FBI agent James Fox did a video on A&E when he retired. His name is James Fox. And he praised my father as being a gentleman that whenever... And he followed my father. He had him under surveillance once for 15 years. That was his assignment, to follow Jimmy Knapp around the world.
Wow.
And he said we stayed at the best of places, and wherever when we were spotted, Jimmy Knapp made sure we always had chairs and a table to sit down instead of standing up in the corner observing him and who he was talking with. That's right. That was James J. Fox. He praised my father as being a gentleman, yes. My father always felt he had a business that was considered to be an illegal number business and by the government. But he said that he looks at 300 families that are working for him every day, and there's no way he could just pull out and let those people go into the streets and go on welfare. So he helped support them. He made them runners. 25% he gave them of all the every dollar they turned in for the number bets.
Now, there's several things. We don't have much time left. I wanted to talk a little bit about, from the writing perspective, on your 26th birthday in 1961.
Correct.
You were keeping, I don't know what the word, a diary perhaps or something. You were writing, making notes.
No, I kept a small notepad.
Okay.
That was in chapter 2 of my story. When my father broke in, he was very upset because of the crooked cop that I got involved with in Union City, New Jersey, and he was very upset that I would work the guy over rather than report it to the boys and let them handle it. You know, the guy tried to shake me down because I owned a nightclub called the Club Ragdoll. And that night that happened, Jimmy Roselli was singing Malavemina in my club, of all things. Yeah. And now my father, he saw, when he came in the room to bawl me out, unexpectedly, he saw me writing in my bedroom, and I was writing in my notebook there. Pipeline, New Jersey was a story. I wanted to be a writer when I was 26 years old, too, even though I was a drinking and a half-assed tough guy, considered. I still, when in my moments alone, I always wrote something, you know. I always put it on paper. And I used the real names of certain individuals that he knew of, and he, I tried to explain to him. I said, I'm not going to use their real names. I need their character in the story I'm writing. He ripped everything up on me.
Yeah.
And that's what happened, yeah.
At that point, Tony, when your dad ripped up your notes and everything,
yeah,
and threw them on the floor,
yeah,
did you ever think then after that happened that you'd ever write a book? Or did
I knew I was going to, because I had a mother who kept encouraging me even after that.
Okay.
That was at that particular day, on my 26th birthday, in chapter 2, my father directed me after he left my bedroom, go see your mother, she's in St. Catherine's Hospital, and say goodbye to her, and I'll let you know, I'll get in touch with you, I'll find you when you could come back to New York. Because he had to settle out that problem for me, because you just don't work over a captain of a police department and walk around the next day without somebody taking a pop shot at you, you know?
Sure.
So I had to leave town. I had to go see my mother. My father directed me what to do. And I told my mother I would be leaving for a while, which she was used to. I've done that many times, you see. And she was in the hospital. And, of course, after I left New York, 6 months later, my mother passed away. I didn't know about it because I didn't come back till 3 years and 2 months later. My father found me in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was that's where I was.
And you also spent a little time in Tucumcari.
Well, Tucumcari population was between 3,500 and 4,500 people. I was Tony Rio then. I changed my name because I didn't want nobody to find me. I didn't know if the cops were after me. I didn't know if the wise guys were after me. All I know is that later on I found out there was a $25,000 reward out to find me and to let me know my mother passed away 6 months after I had left New York. My father put that reward out for me, and it was on Baxter's Horse Results radio show. We didn't have much TV in those days. And
yeah,
my father felt as though I was listening, because I was a gambler all my life, thought I was listening maybe for the results, and Backer, something like that his name was. He said, according to the people told me years later, that he used to say, there's a $25,000 reward, and Tony, if you're listening, everything is forgiven, come back home, your mother is very sick. And Charlie Backner, that was his name, yeah.
So,
and
that's how you got the message.
That's, well, I was in Tucumcari, New Mexico, and you couldn't find a TV set in that town. It was the only industry in the town were gas stations for the tourists passing through Route 66 to gas up, and
right,
or to stay at a half-fast motel overnight, you know, because it was 250 miles from Albuquerque and 100 miles from Amarillo, Texas. So I thought that was a good spot for me, and as I said, I worked there as a barnstormer fighter, a prize fighter, not working, right? But I pulled broom corn, and I picked cotton for 75 cents an hour. Then I formed a union with the Mexicans out there, and I said, we're going to get a dollar an hour, nobody go to work, this farmer has nobody to help him. And then, of course, that's when I got run out of town.
We're just about out of time already. Let me just read something here. It's from page 12 of your book. And I'm just going to quote here.
Yeah.
Telling this story was never an easy decision. I was always torn about it, and there were always roadblocks to telling it. My father, my friends, and my own conscience, too, disapproved of my going public with my story. But now, in my 73rd year of life, I know what must be told. I want to set the record straight. I want to help others. I have to do what I know is right. I've got to open up, because opening up is the best way to heal. Daring to try, to do or die, I've got to tell my story now, I've got to be me. And, of course, that's if that sounds familiar to people, there was a song.
Yes, by Sammy Davis Jr.
And that was one of your favorite songs, right?
Well, it's not that it was one of my favorite songs. It was a song that I met my wife, Laura, at. In another chapter, the chapter says Laura.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 23, I think it is. It says Laura. That's when I met my wife. And the jukebox, the song was playing, I Gotta Be Me. And that's the first dance I had with her. And I stayed with her all night. So not that it was my favorite song. That was a song that I heard when I played the jukebox. And my wife and I were dancing in my father's club called the Highway Lounge. And
so that'll always have a place in your heart, that song.
Huh?
So that'll always have a place in your heart.
Oh yes, yes, yes. I have it on the. I have it on my background music on Publishing Authors website that I'm on too, and that's my background music. I got to be me.
Tony,
but not by Sammy Davis, who would have cost too much money.
We ran out of time already. I want to thank you so much for being on, and we'll get into a lot more on the 16th.
All right,
we didn't have time for tonight, but I really appreciate it, and everybody, yeah. Again, the name of the book is My Father, My Don.
My Don, right.
And it would make a hell of a Christmas present. So.
Very good,
I suggest if you're, you know, anyone who is a mob fan and likes to hear about the older mob, and I'm telling you, you'd love it. So I highly recommend it. And, Tony, we'll talk to you again on the 16th of December.
All right, Dennis, and keep writing.
Thanks a million, Tony.
Thank you, Dennis.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Again, the guest evening was Tony Napoli, author of My Father, My Don, and we'll do it again on the 16th of December on the Las Vegas and the Mob Show. Thank you very much, and have a very safe and happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.